Welcome to an all-new episode of the McFuture Podcast. I'm Steve Factor, and this is part five of solving universal healthcare. In the last episode, I gave you something terrific. I called it something terrific. There is a way to solve this healthcare problem. But the question remains, how are insurers and providers going to make the math work for them and for us? Luckily, I did all the hard work for you, so you don't have to lift a finger off of Emily Ratajkowski's Instagram page. How do you pronounce that name? It's, you know, someone who looks like me can't have a name with that many syllables. To make Factor Care work, and yeah, I'm going to call it Factor Care until somebody stops me, insurers and providers are going to need a combination of four measures. The first is efficiency. It's the most obvious place to look. Cost reductions, process improvements, but also some regulatory changes to take out obstacles. The second thing are new revenue opportunities. The third is prevention. Now, this one's pretty controversial. How do you estimate the price of something that didn't happen? Some very smart people have taken a shot at estimating it. So I've picked out some really good examples of that. The fourth is innovation and competition. What I'm going to hone in on today are entirely new business models that can blow away the cost structure in a positive way. Overall, I found $3 trillion in potential savings. But there will be some overlap because you might do one thing and another won't make sense anymore. Let's jump into the first category, efficiency. Yeah, I know, capitation sounds like something you do after a decapitation goes horribly wrong, but it just means paying a fixed amount for each person covered. It's up to providers to control costs in that situation. It's done today in some cases, like for midwives. It's kind of the baby brother of my proposal in the last episode, which is like mega capitation at the total population level. Capitation was really popular in the 80s, like Roseanne and Bill Cosby, with companies like HIP that acted as both the insurer and the provider because they own their own clinics. It's a system that had bipartisan support. Try that phrase on anything today except for missiles. By 2021, we're going to be spending $400 billion on legal drugs. It kind of makes you wonder if all those potheads have any real science behind their cure-all pot theories on their sticky MacBooks. The U.S. pays the highest cost for drugs in the world, partially because drug companies game our current system. We shield them from foreign competition, and then we grant a bunch of questionable patents and extensions. There are a bunch of proposals on the table now to let foreign manufacturers compete or re-import the same drugs. That's a $120 billion opportunity. And if we were to negotiate drug prices like the UK, we could easily save 50% on the cost, $200 billion total. The third opportunity is unnecessary services. As I talked about in the last episode, our system is overused just because patients aren't paying directly. But also, doctors prescribe tons of unnecessary or expensive, unproven treatments. In some cases, it's like an ATM. They get a kickback or make extra money for more procedures. In other cases, it's just to cover their asses in case of a lawsuit. Under Factor Care, oh my God, I love saying that. It's so goofy and self-serving. These incentives will all go away. Unproven luxury treatments can start on the private supplemental market until they prove themselves and prices come down. This isn't some fantastic dream. The CORE Institute, which is based in Arizona and Michigan, limits unnecessary care by euthanizing annoying patients. I'm kidding. What they do is they just cover the average cost of a specific diagnosis. And then physicians can choose what treatments make sense or not. It's kind of like capitation, which spends a fixed amount per patient, but here it's a fixed amount per diagnosis. So if you have cancer, a particular kind of cancer, the provider gets a set amount and then has to figure out what are the best treatments. It's a little bit more granular. This does create more risk for providers. What if treatments end up costing more than they take in? Why would they agree to it? There's reasons for that. The first is because the options are limited. At the patient level, it's total roulette. Could be a goiter, a yeast infection, or brain cancer. For a specific disease, there's only a limited number of treatments. Also, it gives providers an incentive to focus on prevention and pick the most effective procedures, not just the most expensive ones. And they also can pinpoint which facilities they trust and can negotiate costs with. To do this well, the Core Institute invested a ton of cash in data systems and a whole bunch of other tools. The results were great. They had better outcomes at 30% less cost than others in their region. The next big cost-saving opportunity is excessive administration costs. How often do you get some dead tree letter from your insurer that says, this is not a bill? It's like slaughtering a turkey whenever you need a feather to write with. Some of the admin is from stupid requirements we need to get rid of. The rest is pure inefficiency and failure to go electronic. Factor Care, oh God, I gotta find another name for it. Factor Care finally creates an incentive to convert to electronic records. And maybe we could finally get rid of that stupid waiting room clipboard. You know, they hand that thing to you and the little boxes are way too small or something's missing and you scribble something on the side. It's just goofy to have that in this day and age. Today, medical prices are about as transparent as the East River. Providers and drug companies love that. How do you negotiate if only one party has all the data? It works a lot like salary transparency. It's no wonder that employers promote this culture of, oh, we can't share salary information. Because the more you know, the more leverage you have. And it's leverage they already use. There's $100 billion waiting for us right there. Plus, we'll all care about prices because under Factor Care, we'll pay a percentage. Startups like Amino are already creating these transparent marketplaces for doctors. Think of it as doctor reviews plus procedure prices. Everyone can compare what they're getting just by going on their marketplace. There's another company that's doing something even cooler called Zendi Health. They're kind of like the Priceline of healthcare. They let you offer what you're willing to pay for a procedure, and providers can bid on your business. I've never used their system, but I wonder how close to Priceline it really is. Like if they don't accept your bid for an appendectomy, do you have to add another organ to remove to bid again? If all we did was limit the cost of growth each year to the same level that cosmetic surgery goes up each year, which is about 1.8%, we can save $100 billion. And I'll show the calculation in the final document. Another opportunity that I love is ending doctor protectionism. That's worth about $100 billion. And I'm going to read you a quote from fee.com. It's kind of a political economics blog. Quote, both directly or indirectly, the AMA, which is the American Medical Association, also controls the prices paid to physicians, the licensing of physicians, the accreditation of medical schools, admittance into medical schools, and the payment policies of insurance companies. The AMA runs on membership fees, and its mission is protecting the interests of current doctors, not the American public. End quote. The AMA is running a scarcity cartel. It's the same thing that taxi cartels have done, and then Uber showed up, and Lyft, and all these other guys. All of a sudden, the abundance of options lowered the prices. If we let nurses and hygienists and even receptionists do more of what the doctors do today, like checkups and tests, we'd massively reduce care costs. And nurses have been proven to be just as good as doctors at doing a lot of this stuff. But the AMA cartel lobbies to keep doctors in Bentleys, even though much of that work is already done by nurses here and outside the US. And they drive Volvos. Without these artificial protections, med school would be cheaper. Doctor salaries would go down because we'd need fewer of them. Let's jump into the second category. Preventative care is a $433 billion savings opportunity. Half of American adults have a chronic disease of some kind. Conditions like diabetes, obesity, opioid addiction. They're going to cost us about $800 billion in lost productivity over the next 15 years. Because these problems are social and financial and behavioral, they're very messy. No one can agree if prevention will save $433 billion or nothing at all. Skeptics refer to this 2010 study that extrapolated a bunch of old technologies across a lot of different conditions. A much better way to do it is using modern tools and go into the specific diagnoses where we know there can be savings. One opportunity in prevention is telemedicine and all these connected devices. That's about a $305 billion savings opportunity. The Goldman Sachs estimate includes everything from remote consultations to web and phone connected trackers that measure all sorts of vital signs, heart rate, blood pressure, glucose. Imagine one doctor can now monitor tens of thousands of patients at once and then get notified whenever some sneaky diabetic devours leftover birthday cake at 2 a.m. I can imagine my doctor yelling at me through my Alexa speaker, "Drop the tiramisu, fatso." The doctor can actively contact only the patients with problems, not the healthy ones when they get lonely. With the IoT devices, everything will be connected and trackable online. And we're gladly going to make the privacy trade-off as long as we see a benefit. It's the same thing we do with Google. We give up all of our personal information just for the convenience, and we're going to do the same thing with healthcare information. It's human nature. Even Apple just put an EKG heart monitor into their latest watch. Now, word of advice, hold off on that at-home prostate exam. The iPhone XS is bigger than it looks. Almost every major healthcare company now offers some form of telehealth. Health First is partnered with Teladoc. UPMC offers something called Anywhere Care. They offer 24-hour access to real doctors, eliminating thousands of office visits. And they're giving doctors a chance to see you naked from the convenience of their phones without having to buy those weird tokens. On the retail side, you have companies like Warby Parker, which does designer glasses. They have an app that can check your vision and write a prescription right off your phone. You never have to visit or go anywhere, and then you can order your glasses by tapping a button. Some do argue that telehealth actually increases utilization, but we're way too early in this tracking technology. In my opinion, the logic and efficiency of not having to physically visit a doctor is irrefutable long term. Sure, 70 is the new Mitt Romney, but old people aren't as durable as they look, especially when you start sparring with them in the ring. I'm just kidding. Making nursing facilities available to old people could prevent far pricier hospitalization. This is a quick win because the infrastructure already exists. This one's worth about $166 billion in savings. Another one that's a quick win is medication adherence technology. What does that mean? People who shouldn't take drugs never forget to take them. People we actually need taking drugs always forget. Life's silly that way and expensive. Finding better ways to get slackers to take their meds could save us $150 billion, alleviating all of the problems and the expenses that their carelessness creates. It might be an app or even a little robot that threatens to kill your chihuahua if you suddenly proclaim, "I'm done taking Zoloft," as you pour your pills off the balcony wearing a mariachi outfit. The next one is kind of an anti-innovation opportunity. And there's no way to put it nicely. We are monsters. Instead of letting people die with dignity, we spend billions pretending to extend people's lives. That's not at all what we're doing. We're prolonging their deaths. We're watching them rot away, useless and helpless, in hospital beds, milking them for insurance money. It's disgusting. As a society, just learning to say goodbye without torturing people in some zombie-like hospital purgatory can save us $100 billion. And the medical profession is already starting to move beyond fighting death to easing that transition. Diabetes is just the beginning, said my doctor, if I don't quit M&Ms. It's also one of many diseases that can be detected earlier with better data analysis and earlier prevention. This one disease costs us $245 billion in lost wages alone. Diabetes AI, or artificial intelligence, is a $100 billion annual savings opportunity. Artificial intelligence is already transforming healthcare, and a lot of people are predicting it's going to create massive scale, helping fewer doctors service more patients, because the diagnoses are going to be done by machines, not people. IBM's Watson is sifting through gigabytes of data to help diagnose cancer more effectively. Facebook can see if you're suicidal, homicidal, or about to break up. Now, I'm not joking. They can use social posts, how often you post, who you interact with. What they can't tell is why you bought your ad with rubles. Already, Google's DeepMind, it's helping recognize vision-threatening conditions using eye scans. Eventually, Google will know who is prone to what ailments based on where they live and what they search. Others will be able to tell that based on smell. Dogs can already sniff out some cancers and the scrumptious buttocks of another dog. We're not too far off from doing this with iPhone attachments. That'll hopefully be a bit more dignified. And then there's a robot that recently passed a medical licensing exam in China. And no, it's not like one of those IQ tests you take online to make yourself feel better and then burn yourself trying to make coffee because you really aren't that bright. One example of how AI might work is a company called Virta. It's an app that gathers all kinds of patient data, some automatically from devices like Fitbits or manually from questions based on your mood or relationship to donuts. Then their AI uses that information to give you a customized diet and lifestyle advice. It also flags warning signs for doctors to review and then reach out to you if needed. It's not man versus machine. It's man plus machine. A little bit more RoboCop than Cylon. Let's jump into the third category, new revenue opportunities. There is a huge opportunity servicing rich people. Before all the billionaires escaped to tax havens like Puerto Rico, Cayman Islands, and post-apocalyptic New Zealand, we're going to need them to subsidize factor care or whatever else democratic socialists come up with. And just like first-class flyers make our emotional support dogs and cattle cars affordable, so can luxury healthcare. It wouldn't be much different from how foreign students subsidize scholarships at a bunch of American universities. Ever get sunstroke on your yacht or cut yourself on a diamond inside your Birkin bag? Has your daughter ever tripped on Justin Timberlake's mic cable at her Sweet 16? Well, get ready to be healed. There's a new service taking off in New York and a couple of other places that charges a mere $40,000 per person or $80,000 per family to take care of every medical need in style. If just half of the multimillionaires in this country paid $40,000 a year for this kind of service, this would be a $150 billion opportunity. Think of all the bankers we could save. Hashtag Bank Lives Matter. Beauty and aging is a $1 $1 trillion market. Have you been inside of a New York City Duane Reade or a CVS drugstore lately? You'd die of zit-related blood loss before finding a single drop of Oxy in that place. You'd never know it was a pharmacy. If instead you wanted to cover your blotchy face and $80 foundation, it's the first thing you'll see before you black out from your blackheads. Diet and nutrition is exploding. My Facebook friends can't stop declaring allegiance to veganism, paleo, or ketosis, which I think is a spell in Narnia. That space is $574 billion. Another one that's related is medical and wellness tourism. Over a decade ago, we looked at this opportunity of medical tourism at MasterCard. It wasn't much. Boy, were we wrong. Today, you can get your eyes animated in Korea, your butt Kardashianed in Brazil, and a wall of teeth erected in Mexico. And no, Mexico won't pay for it. Come on, America, won't you please give silicone a chance? There's no reason we can't be the Disney World of dialysis or the water world of weight loss. Today, healthy Chinese flock to the US paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for all kinds of awesome treatments that we can't afford. Thanks, oligarchy. To capitalize, it doesn't even have to be medical. Yoga retreats, wellness, shooting kombucha in your colon, making dope with Willie Nelson, ayahuasca escapes, where I'm pretty sure you can resurrect Vikings. Even Gwyneth Paltrow's jade vagina balls. Don't ask, just it's real, look it up. Alternative medicine is already a $37 billion business, and it's going up from there. Even top hospitals are getting in on it. Wellness is an even bigger ecosystem that includes lodging and retreats, which is $100 billion, transportation, another $100 billion, health food and beverages, $82 billion, fitness products, and all sorts of activities and excursions. This market is huge and growing. Let's get into the last category. Innovation and competition. I'm going to give you just a few examples, like eliminating the FDA. I know there's a bunch of crazy libertarians that talk about that, but that's not exactly what I have in mind. Today, it costs drug companies $1 billion to get one drug approved. That includes R&D and all the back and forth with the FDA. Guess who ultimately pays for that? We do. Not only does that drive up prices and delay all kinds of essential medications, killing people, but it also makes it too expensive to compete with existing drug companies. So no one new can enter the market without a ton of money behind them. Want to know who else does the same exact job as the FDA? Every other country. There is no reason we couldn't pool our resources with Europe, Australia, and other developed countries to have a common service that checks all medications for safety and efficacy. All we have to do is negotiate the standards. Maybe we approve certain things and they don't, but the work is exactly the same. You can already see these kinds of opportunities taking shape. A bunch of hospitals are unhappy with pharma companies because all of these critical medications are in short supply. These companies have no incentive to make drugs that aren't super expensive. A group of American hospitals banded together to form something called Civica RX, which is a nonprofit that will manufacture its own supply of about 14 different generic drugs. And their members have already pledged $100 million to launch the company. And just a reminder from our past episodes, all of these guys are innovating around a deeply broken system. It's like discovering a great painkiller because you spend all day bonking yourself over the head with a meat tenderizer. Today, DNA tests can tell us if we're prone to certain diseases or we're fathered by some idiot on Jerry Springer. Angelina Jolie famously had a double mastectomy because her family was prone to breast cancer. There are tests and apps that can identify genetic risks and then help customize your health regimen to address them. This could lower treatment costs dramatically. And eventually, the technology called CRISPR, which lets you rewrite our DNA, can erase entire diseases.
Or that multi-generational unibrow.
Watch out, Frida Kahlo. Some startups aren't waiting for universal care. One of them is called Forward. It charges $149 a month to see a doctor as often as you want. But they focus on prevention, offering treatments for high cholesterol and pap smears and vaccines and blood tests. They also track your vitals using wearables and an app that they give you. Prescriptions are also included. Parsley Health in New York is a little bit less tech-focused. They focus more on root causes, like all those great HBO shows that force you into a snacking spiral. What if parsley becomes the main course? You take a model like Parsley or Forward at $150 a month, then add catastrophic coverage, a spending limit, surgery and hospitalization, and some kind of deductible. All of a sudden, it starts to look like a comprehensive program. And with all these providers and insurers consolidating, it's just a matter of time before they start looking at companies like this to help lower their costs. Maybe these guys are building our next healthcare system. Aging prevention is also making huge strides. Vampires like Peter Thiel pay $8,000 for transfusions of young blood, something you used to have to drink from the tap in medieval London. By the way, I'm not joking. Look this up. Others like Alphabet's Calico, which is Google's health research startup, they're dedicating themselves to turning back time and aging. Ray Kurzweil, who works for them, is practically a fetus already. The man is 60 years old. Then there's a company that makes something called the Elysium pill, which costs about $50 a month. They're claiming they have the science that can reverse aging, and they have some serious heavy hitters on board. We have incredible ways of incentivizing the right behaviors at a very granular level, if we know what's healthy. One way is taxing things like carbs, sugars, and other things that are known to make us sick. Or we could give people bonuses or discounts for eating healthy. People can send their supermarket and restaurant receipts for rebates the way people get reimbursed for gym memberships. We could even give tax breaks to businesses that serve healthy food the way we do car makers that sell electrics. This might be more interventionist than a lot of people like, and I recognize that. In fact, I would argue that if we put something like this in, it has to have an expiration date. We don't know that the thing that's healthy today will continue to be healthy in the future. The beauty of it is it can be tried to specific populations just to see if it works. And we could do it as a bonus, not a tax. All of this can generate entirely new business models. For example, we already have the technology to make our pool of patients efficient. Think about company vacation days. Some companies let you roll them over. Others let you trade days with coworkers. What if you could give up your cancer screening or annual exam or vision benefit to someone who needs it? You can optimize the pool more effectively, lowering costs while helping others. This could work a lot like a carbon credit trading system. Everyone got all excited when Amazon got into healthcare. It's like the Mashiach arrived. So far, the company plans to provide healthcare just to its own employees, as well as those of Berkshire Hathaway and JP Morgan Chase. Now, they might come up with some great cost-sharing model, but we're a few years from knowing if this means anything for the rest of us. They're unlikely to move us off this regressive employer-based insurance system. It might even take us deeper in that direction. A lot of companies are already building on-site health clinics for their employees. It's a great service. Plus, it's sort of like a medical snack drawer. You know how they have the snack drawer or the on-site cafeteria just to make sure you're not away from your desk for more than 5 minutes? Well, it's the same thing with these clinics. This is also happening outside the corporate world. Walmart is opening a bunch of clinics inside of their stores. Costco can do the same. There are other ways coverage can be delivered more cheaply. And the more we allow these non-traditional competitors, the better off we're going to be. And there's no reason we couldn't put a bunch of clinics into every office building that work across multiple employers to make healthcare more convenient and less expensive. Anyway, I'm Steve Factor. Join me, I want to say next week, but sometimes these episodes take longer. As you probably could imagine, there's a ton of research that goes into these, so I hope you appreciate that. I'm going to try to get the conclusion out next week, if not the week after. Anyway, if you enjoyed this, share it with a friend, review it on iTunes, and you won't want to miss the final episode of this series. It's all about the future and why this healthcare discussion wasn't about healthcare at all. It was about something much bigger. I'll get into it next week or something close. I'm Steve Factor for The McFuture. See you next time.